Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of SFP Now. With me today is Reisa, as always. We've got a great interview lined up for you with Andrew Chalmers, who's the executive producer and one of the main forces behind a really good Doctor Who audio series called Doctor Who Dark Matters, I think it's called. But we've got him. You've got Andrew on later on. But before we get to that, we have got some news. And first bit of news. This is really being confirmed today by Jenna Coleman, but it was pretty much official yesterday. Jenna Coleman has left Doctor Who. This series will be her final series of adventures on the TARDIS. And by the end of this series, she will be officially the longest running companion in the modern era of Doctor Who, because she basically goes past Karen Gillan as Amy Pond. So Reisa, what do you think of the of Karen Gillan leaving? Jenna Coleman leaving.
Yes. I'm ready. I'm ready for a new companion.
I'm kind of hoping that, you know, that they actually knew about this a few months ago and that they've actually had a chance to finish off her arc.
She said in interviews, which I watched, that they had been planning this for about a year and a half.
So maybe that's why we didn't get too much of the Impossible Girl arc last year then.
Yeah, that might be why. I hope that's why.
I'm hoping that's why as well, because, you know, obviously last year we were both a little bit disappointed with the series. I think one of the other reasons we're disappointed with the series is the first six scripts and the first six episodes have been leaked, so we kind of learned about all the surprises. Irrespective of whether we downloaded and watched those episodes or not, we still learnt about all the surprises before the series actually came to air, due to the amount of spoilage that people were releasing. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll kind of miss her because I think she's been a really good companion. But I'm with you. I think it's time to move on. I'm kind of hoping they give him a male companion next time. So can actually break this chain.
Yeah, or mix it up with a male and a female so that we get both.
We've already had that with Amy and Rory.
That's true.
But, you know, so like, it'd be good to have that again, especially now that we've got an older doctor, because you can kind of mentor the both of them. So, yeah, that's an interesting one. This one, this is a story for the UK side of things. The UK is to broadcast season 2 of Agent Carter in early 2016. Basically, it means that Fox, which airs the show in the UK here, they're going to be trying to air the series shortly after the US premiership series on NBC. So
cool.
That's really good news for UK viewers.
Happy for you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really happy about it. It means I don't have to download it legally through BitTorrent.
Oh, what's up?
Yeah, not that I actually did that. I must say I don't condone people doing that. Okay, so don't try it at home, kids. So I believe you've got a bit of DC news.
Yes, I'll start with that. Got actually some really nice DC news that I just published in my most recent DC Roundup. A source called The Tracking Board, which is a inside Hollywood source, says that Greg Berlanti of Arrow and Flash and Supergirl and everything DC fame of late is going to be behind a Booster Gold and Blue Beetle movie.
Interesting.
And, And in contrast to the darker toned Suicide Squad and Superman versus Batman and Man of Steel, they're actually aiming for something that's going to be a buddy comedy.
We can't really do anything else with Beast to go, to be honest.
No, you can't.
You know, he's kind of a comedic character. He isn't my cup of tea, neither is Blue Beetle, but, you know, I do know that both those characters have a pretty good fan base.
Yeah.
You know,
what's interesting to me is that the head of DC Entertainment has basically said in various interviews that the movie side and the TV side will not be interacting, and yet, spoiler, Booster Gold is Rip Hunter's dad.
Uh-huh.
And the reason why Rip Hunter has to call himself Rip Hunter, basically. And we know that Rip Hunter is going to be on Legends of Tomorrow. And so it's going to be interesting to see whether they're actually going to have a second TV version of Booster Gold to accommodate Rip Hunter's canon backstory, or whether they're going to change it up to accommodate the no interaction rule that they've got going on.
They'll probably change it up, I reckon.
Yeah, they may.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other DC news? Because as you always tell me on Twitter, DC leaks like a sieve.
Yes. DC leaks like a massive sieve. A story that came out after I published that will make it onto the next DC Roundup, actually, is that Bill Finger, the co-creator with Bob Kane of a lot of the Batman elements, will be co-credited in Batman versus Superman and in Gotham later this season. They're going to push
finally.
Yes.
Finally, because the thing is with the whole Batman thing, every time we've had a Batman film in the movie theater, or every time we've done a TV series of Batman, it's always been Bob Kane that's been credited. Bill Finger's always kind of been shafted, in spite of the fact that it was actually Bill Finger that, you know, created the Joker. And most of the you know, the top cast villains that Batman has. You know, so, you know, to me, this is no brain. This is something that should have happened decades ago.
Yes, yes.
So I'm just grateful that, you know, Bill Finger's contribution is actually now being finally recognised. You know, it's just a pity that they couldn't, you know, find it in their hearts to actually do it a lot sooner. You know, maybe when the guy was actually still alive to enjoy
alive.
It.
Yeah.
That's actually good news, and I do believe it's actually been going on for a while as well, because I think we actually reported something on that at Sci-Fi Pulse a few years, you know, probably about 6 months back.
They've been in negotiations for Yonks, and they finally finalized it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy.
And so am I, because, you know, it's sort of like, I always felt it was a bit odd how Bob Kane seemed to get odd credit. But then again, Bob Kane was very much like Stan Lee is, in that he was very good at courting the cameras and courting publicity. You know, he knew how to handle himself in that situation, whereas, you know, these artists, you know, many of them are quite modest souls.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, because of that, they never even get the recognition they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here's one for you. Plans are actually moving forward now with a Tomb Raider movie reboot, which has been sort of like in the works for a couple of years now. And here's what it says here. It looks like plans are definitely moving forward with a Tomb Raider movie reboot. And adding to the excitement is the fact that there is a trio of ultra-talented female directors lined up from Lara Croft's next movie adventure. Oscar-winning Kurt Mocker director Catherine Bigelow, Twilight filmmaker Catherine Hardwicke, and Deep Impact's Mimi Gneda are all on the shortlist for the blockbuster, according to Tracking Board. The Walking Dead's Tricia Block was previously said to be attached to the Warner Brothers and Eidos produced film. However, the TV director passed on the chance to make the project. Evan Daugherty of Divergent and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fame is writing the script for the Tomb Raider reboot. Catherine Bigelow was perhaps the most recognisable name to mainstream audiences due to her Oscar-winning film Hurt Locker, but prior to that, she had done a shedload of big-budget action films. Her big break was probably Point Break, which starred Keanu Reeves and the late Patrick Swayze. But since then, she has done other great movies such as K19 Widowmaker and Zero Dark Thirty. Personally, if I was actually in charge of this production, I'd go with Bigelow. I don't know about you, Risa.
Yeah, any of them will be good as long as it's a female director.
Well,
it really needs to be female.
Well, to be honest, Catherine Hardwicke had a void because of the Twilight connection. Because we don't want Lara Croft turning into a glitter-skinned vampire.
This is true.
Mimi Gneda, maybe, because Deep Impact was a pretty solid movie. But I'd go with Catherine Bigelow because she's got a wealth of experience with action, with the action genre.
Yeah. And I really hope they go with an unknown to play Laura this time and have it be a breakout role. Because as good as Angelina Jolie was, I think it's the sort of role that you kind of have to give to an ingenue and let somebody just sort of blossom into it.
Yeah, but to be honest, I think, you know, at the time that they made the first Tomb Raider movie, Angelina Jolie's star was only really on the rise at that point.
That's true.
I mean,
that's true.
You know, she was
she
still...
became bigger later. Yeah.
She became bigger by the time they made the second one, but you know her style was still on the rise. I mean, one of the first films I remember seeing Angelina Jolie in was a movie called Hackers, in you know which also starred Johnny Lee Miller, and I think she was actually dating him at the time, so I think that she made that. But that was one of the first films I remember seeing her in, and then it was a couple of years time she sort of like turned up in Tomb Raider, but you know. The thing is with Jolie, she's such a versatile actress. She can do drama and she can do action, and you know that's one thing that's always been really cool about her.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Okay, another story before we pass on to the story that you're just busting to get out there. Gambit is seeking a new director, and it appears that a Gambit and Deadpool crossover is likely to happen. Basically, what's happened here is it's been revealed that Rupert Wyatt has chose to quit work on Fox's X-Men Gambit movie in order to work on another project. Wyatt issued the following statement sent to Comic Book Resources News via 20th Century Fox. I was very much looking forward to working with my friend Channing Tatum and the team at Fox, but regrettably, a push in the start date now conflicts with another project. I thank them for the opportunity, and I know that Gambit will make a terrific film. This pretty much leaves Fox with the difficult job of finding another suitable director for the film, which is still scheduled to be released in the autumn of 2016. According to Hollywood Reporter, an escalating budget due to script issues also contributed to Wyatt's exit. In a related story, producer Simon Kinberg has confirmed that Deadpool and Gambit are part of the same universe as Days of Future Past, and there are plans for Avengers-style crossovers. Kinberg spoke to MTV at the Toronto International Film Festival, revealing that he hopes to cross-pollinate characters from their standalone movies in the future. The idea is that we sort of reset the timeline after Days of Future Past in some ways, and if not erased, certainly allowed for change from X to X123, he said. Everything from Days of Future Past forward, 1973, everything we set now becomes canon. So the Gambit movie, the Deadpool movie, will exist in a world that acknowledges whatever happened in Days of Future Past and moving forward. This doesn't mean they'll always interact with those characters, obviously. It's not like every movie has all the characters, but they all have to exist within the same rules. Kinberg added there will be interplay between different characters in different movies. All three properties have films due out next year, with X-Men Apocalypse released in UK cinemas on May 19th and in the US on May 27th. Meanwhile, Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool finally hits cinemas on February 12th, and Channing Tatum is still set to star as Gambit in his own solo film, which is due out in October of 2016. So what do you reckon to all that?
I just hope that they produce a good movie out of it, because I've seen situations where they've had writer shakeups, director shakeups, everybody shakeups, and then the movies are not great. I hope they can actually maintain a solid narrative.
Prime example of that would be Catwoman. But, you know, then again, you know, sort of like the moment they kind of cast Halle Berry in that, I was kind of worried. But at least, much like one of the writers, she fronted up for the Razzie, so even she knew it was bad. Yeah, I'm kind of a little worried, but then again, you know, it's Fox, it's the X-Men franchise. They finally got it back on track, thanks muchly to Matthew Vaughn and X Days, you know, and X-Men First Class and the follow-up work that Brian Singer was able to do when he returned to the X-Men last year in Days of Future Past, which I was actually really worried about, to be honest, because I'm not really a big Brian. It was, but, you know, I've never really been a big Brian Singer fan. I've been, I thought the first X-Men and second X-Men was, you know, all right, but they were really basically Wolverine movies, you know. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to Deadpool.
Yes, I am too.
I'm just not sure about Channing Tatum as Gambit.
We will have to see.
I mean, you know, I'm hoping he can prove me wrong, but, you know, I just can't, you know, I'm just having problems envisioning him as Gambit. Anyway, I believe you've got some exciting Torchwood-related audio news.
Yes. They're doing currently a six-part series where they have character-centric episodes with small supporting casts. And the second one will be Reese and Gwen. Oh, no, the third one will be Reese and Gwen. The second one will be Yondu. But the fourth one, Big Finish is delighted to announce the return of Tracy Ann Oberman as Yvonne Hartman in Torchwood One Rule, fourth release in the new series of Torchwood audio plays.
Cool. Yeah, Tracy Ann Oberman, she was evil.
Yes. And
didn't she become a Cyberman?
She became a Cyberman and ended up dead. Yeah, but this one is apparently going to be set a year before that, and we're going to see a story that contributes to the psychological deterioration that we find when we first meet her in Army of Ghosts.
Cool, because she was actually proper psycho in Army of Ghosts.
Yes, and we're going to see she's not that way. In fact, Torchwood One Rule has been written by a prolific author, Joseph Lister, whose previous credits include the second series of Torchwood episode, A Day in the Death. And he's saying, James Goss gave me a choice of available characters, but it was Yvonne who leapt out at me. She's one of my favorite characters who have appeared in Doctor Who, and she has questionable beliefs, but she genuinely thinks she's doing the best thing for her country. She's also incredibly funny and brilliantly performs. And he goes on to say, let me get down here, He goes on to say, that when we presented the idea of using Yvonne, says producer James Goss, and Matt Nichols of BBC Worldwide came up with a brilliant caveat. He suggested that we could have Yvonne, but not the all-powerful Queen Bee of Canary Wharf. Instead, he wanted to have her thoroughly come unstuck in Cardiff.
Mm-hmm.
So we see her, you know, we see the beginnings of the unraveling, basically.
Mm-hmm. Now, that sounds like it could be interesting. I mean, you know, it was a shame that they kind of killed her off at the end, because, you know, would it be, you know, she'd have been an interesting character to continue having on the show.
Yes.
But yeah, it's you know, it seems to be happening with Torchwood, you know,
finally,
at the moment in the audios. You know, I think the audios is probably as good as it's going to get, though. I don't think we're going to see another TV series.
No, and I think the BBC basically tacitly acknowledged that they were out of the spin-off business when they refused to front a spin-off starring Gemma Redgrave as the Brigadier's daughter, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So, because if they're not going to do that spin-off, they're not going to do any spin-off.
Yeah, and you know, let's face it, Gemma Redgrave, bigger pull than John Barrowman.
Yes.
In terms of name recognition and stardom, really, you know, because you've got the whole Redgrave clan, the whole Redgrave family.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's gonna be interesting. It's kind of funny you should mention the Brigadier, because I've actually just watched the season 8 finale of Doctor Who again.
Mixed bag at best.
It was, but I kind of figured I'd better watch it before we start the new series on Saturday. So, and talking of which, before we go on to our interview, which is with Andrew Chalmers, who'll be talking about the audio series Doctor Who Dark Journey, we're going to be back on Sunday at roughly 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time with the first episode of 12 episode run of the Pandorica Opens, which is our Doctor Who discussion show. And in that show, Raissa and I will be reviewing the Magician's Apprentice, which is the first episode, and we'll be looking at the media reaction to it and everything else. So, you know, I hope everyone tunes in for that. Anyway, thanks, Raissa, for joining us.
You're welcome.
It's now time for our exciting interview with Andrew Chalmers. Okay, I'd like to welcome Andrew Chalmers to the show. He's actually one of the creators. Are you one of the creators of the Doctor Who fan audio Dark Journey? Just checking.
Yes, absolutely. Mike and I, MA, as we call him, are the guys behind it. So blame us, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, all I'll say is you guys sent me this press release last week for your second series of Dark Journey, and I've got to say it kind of intrigued me. You know, a Canadian Doctor Who audio series, which is kind of doing its own thing, and you know, and the fact that you got, you know, a Doctor Who meets Sherlock Holmes storyline going for this new series as well kind of got me intrigued, because that'd be the ultimate, see, you know, having the Doctor and Sherlock hang out together, because they're kind of like both complete opposites of the same coin.
Yeah.
You know, Sherlock aspires to be a god, and the Doctor's sort of like trying so hard to be human.
Yeah, that's a very good way of actually describing it. I mean, we came up with the idea a long time ago. It was written before all the current, you know, Sherlock hype. There were no movies, there was nothing on the BBC. It was written, I think, 2008, 2009, And we sort of based it on a classic home from the late 18th century. And because of that, we also threw in Jack the Ripper, because that was around the same time, or we made it around the same time, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. So, so the actual idea behind that journey, does that go back to 2008, or just the actual storyline of having Sherlock Holmes work with the Doctor?
Well, kind of the same for each of them. I was writing a script. I was doing one or two writing courses, screenplay courses at the University of Toronto, and I was also writing a lot of scripts that I was hoping to submit, and, you know, spec scripts. And I did an episode of The Office, the US version of The Office. And I wanted to do, you know, Doctor Who, even though I was advised not to do Doctor Who because, you know, it was so sort of established. But I thought, well, what the hell, and I'll have a bash at it. And that's basically what it was. I thought, okay, Holmes and the Doctor. But like I said, I was brought up on each of them. But it was before all the hype and the movies and all the rest of it, hence the 1888 Holmes, wonderfully played by Roy Miranda, who is a Brit. I mean, we all live over here in Toronto, Canada, but there is a British influence with a lot of expats involved. Roy actually won an Audioverse Award for playing Sherlock Holmes for season one. So that was, you know, wonderful. We got a few nominations. I was nominated for writing. didn't win that. Obviously, I'm going to have to, you know, bribe them with more money for season two. But Roy got the award, which was fantastic. So yeah, it's been really it's been really fantastic. But the overall thing has been on the go now for 7 years.
Wow. So, you know, you've taken 7 years to do two seasons, which, you know, that kind of goes to show how much work and preparation does go into these things. You know, I mean, they say it all the time. I mean, you know, you have films and TV series that are kind of like gestating in pre-production, like for eternity sort of thing. And
yeah,
you know,
well, the original, it does take a long time. I wrote the script and it sort of kind of sat on a table for 5 years. So I would say that season one, the idea, and Mike was the driving force behind the idea. Mike and I had done other stuff before. We'd done a few pilots and podcasts and radio stuff. But the idea to make an audio adventure or a podcast, whatever you want to call it, came about a couple of years ago. So I would probably say that season, from the idea, which came up in a Chinese restaurant, we probably took about 7 months from the original idea to the release. So the original idea, then we have to cast it, then we have to audition people, and then we have to alter the script for audio, because the script was originally done for TV. Things work on TV, things don't work on audio, so you have to rewrite certain scenes so you can explain to the audience what's going on. Season two has been on the go since last November when we recorded it in studio. So season two is a bit more advanced. There's more episodes. There are longer episodes. There's more action sequences, which are a real challenge. We had one sound engineer for season one, and for season two, we've got about seven. Plus, we have Joshua Hemmings, who's like our... he's like our own John Williams. He composes the music, which we've had a lot of wonderful compliments about, and it's all down to Josh, really. He really is a maestro when it comes to that. So we've had a lot of support in the second season, but we needed it because it was quite ambitious after season one reaction from the people. And we ended on a huge cliffhanger as well for season one.
Well, that's very daring.
Yeah, it was. A lot of people thought that was the end, actually. And I don't want to spoil it for anyone who hasn't listen to season one, but people were like, is that it? That's a bit of a depressing way to end. And we're like, no, there is going to be season two, just we need to get it done. But it does, I mean, it's hours and hours going to, you know, looking and listening to like a 12-minute episode, the sound, the effects, the music, the editing. It really is, it's minute work, but when you get it, like anything else, like, you know, Ian, with the podcast you do, it's a feeling of achievement as well, especially when we can share it with with people. I mean, we're fans ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for fans, obviously, by the fans, for fans, whatever our slogan is, yes.
So, I mean, it's kind of like giving something back.
Yeah,
you know.
It is. It is, really. We want to reciprocate the affection and the welcome that we've had, which is why we're doing the launch on basically all of our friends' websites who supported us in season one. And all the information is on our website. So the whole thing's been wonderful, and the best thing has been the people that we've met. I say it in every interview, but it's the truth.
Yeah. Well, just very quickly, for those that you know are maybe not come across that journey yet, could you kind of briefly touch on describe the story without giving too much away, because. You know,
yeah.
for one thing, you got Doctor Who and you got Sherlock Holmes. Are they working together? Or are they kind of like working at opposite ends to each other?
Right. Well, a little bit of each, really. But the where we open up in season one is the Doctor basically emerges at a press conference held by Scotland Yard, who have basically handed the case over to Sherlock Holmes. London's in uproar. And the Doctor basically becomes companion to Holmes because Watson is away in Edinburgh recuperating from an injury. So Holmes basically needs a companion. He needs a doctor, if you know what I mean. So my Doctor becomes his companion to unravel the mystery of the Jack the Ripper murders, which obviously are plaguing London. Throughout the course of the five episodes, it's revealed that there's an alien presence. We look at why the murders are committed. Nothing is as it seems. The Doctor meets a mysterious young lady called Cassandra, who he has a bit of a link with. Meets Emily Hudson, who is looking after Holmes. And it kind of unravels from there at the end, leaving the end of season one very bleak. But that's why we have season two.
Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Which Doctor is it supposed to be? Is it on like an alternate universe sort of thing where it's kind of just your own Doctor, or is it on like one of the 12 Doctors that we've had already?
Right. Well, that's an interesting question. Because originally it was written when no one had heard of the 11th or the 12th or the War Doctor. So originally I thought, I'll have Mr. Tennant in it. I'll do David Tennant. It'll be 45 minutes. When I wrote the script, there was no inkling of doing an audio adventure. So it wasn't a case of, I would certainly not ever try to attempt a lame impersonation of, you know, David Tennant. But obviously since then we've made it and we've had all these other Doctors, but the idea after we dropped the idea of having Tennant, we thought let's have a Doctor on his last legs. Let's have a Doctor on his last regeneration. So that was the idea. So if my Doctor was to die, then he doesn't know what's going to happen. In his mind, that's it. Now, obviously since then we've had Matt Smith and we've had the extension of the regeneration cycle. But my Doctor originally was going to be on his last legs, which we thought was added drama. He's also rather dark. He's haunted by the events of the Noble Project, which are not revealed, only hinted at in season one. But he's haunted by these, and he's rather dark at times. He's obviously still the Doctor, but he's got an edge to him, which I'm very happy to say a lot of people have sort of picked up in reviews, which is good, because you know we're not professionals, right? So it's nice when you intend something and it sort of comes off in the translation.
Cool. It's Doctor Who meets Sherlock Holmes. Chasing after Jack the Ripper. Okay. It kind of sounds a little bit like the Philip Hinchcliffe era. Is that kind of what you're trying to channel?
I don't think we're trying to channel that, but I think that it is influenced by that. I love that era of Doctor Who, and I love a lot of that Who was based on sort of like horror stories and things like that. So yeah, I would go along with that. We didn't try and channel that, but it would be something that wouldn't be out of place in that kind of era, the feel of it, London and I mean, a lot of people, I mean, I love the Wang Chiang. I love that. So that's probably an influence. Many years ago, I saw a great film called Murder by Decree, which had Sherlock Holmes up against Jack the Ripper. So, you know, there's always been that aspect to it. So I think, you know, there's all sorts of influences, you know, kind of for it. But yeah, it would be good to have it slot into Hinchcliffe's universe kind of some way. Yeah, that would be fantastic and quite a nice compliment. Thank you.
Was Murder by Decree, that was the one with Christopher Plummer in, right?
Yes, that's brilliant, Ian, because not many people, I'm always encouraging people to go watch Murder by Decree. The interesting thing about Murder by Decree is that Plummer, who is Canadian, a wonderful, wonderful gentleman, and obviously still very much active in the business, he plays Holmes absolutely brilliantly. There's a brilliant scene with him and Watson and a pea on a fork. Do you remember that?
Yep, I do. It's I've seen it. I've only ever seen it twice, but I have seen it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like one of those films that was on quite a lot in the 70s and 80s, and my dad was a Sherlock Holmes fan, so was my sister, and we all were, really. I grew up watching the repeats of the Basil Rathbone films on BBC Two.
Same here. My mum got me into Rathbone, and Watson was played by Nigel Bruce, I think.
Watson was kind of, you know, because of the times they were made, they didn't want to have Watson be as confident as Holmes.
Yes,
you know?
He was a bit more of a, like, almost like a bumbling buffoon Holmes. Like, Holmes was always sort of, like, ahead of him, that he was quite heroic. Have you ever heard of The Private Life of Sherlock Holmes? A film from the early 70s.
I've heard of it. I don't think I've actually seen that one, though.
Very interesting. We watched it the other day, and Mark Gatiss actually credited this with influencing the series when Moffat and him got together to make it. So there were some things around. I mean, Holmes and Watson are always the same, really. I mean, there's always that kind of, if you read the books, you know, the books are fantastic reading. They're almost timeless in a way. But it's always the same in terms of the dynamic. But it's good. It's very entertaining as well. A little bit different. Kind of angle and sort of aspect to view it by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, I've got a feeling that, you know, you being originally from Scotland, you probably had a similar sort of like upbringing to me, you know, 70s and 80s, Sherlock Holmes on the TV every Friday night, coinciding with the 6 o'clock news. And when it wasn't that, it was Tarzan, and when it wasn't that, they just did a season of sci-fi movies. So.
Yeah, there was always something floating around, like a Westworld, or you know, this kind of late at night you might come across something like The Wicker Man that would scare you senseless. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of sort of aspect to it. But I'm always plugging Murder by Decree. It's directed by a Canadian, Bob Clark. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it was filmed in Canada, because they often used Montreal. Old Montreal is often actually doubled as Victorian London for many, many Holmes versions that have been done over here. So it's interesting that it's got the Canadian aspect to it as well, much like ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And it's also kind of interesting, you know, from Mancunian, you know, point of view, that the recent Sherlock Holmes films with Robert Downey, they actually shot scenes of Victorian London along the Manchester Ship Canal.
Yes, I remember sort of avidly looking on websites and looking at behind the scenes stuff, and it was interesting. I love the chase sequence in the first one that ends up in that massive warehouse and next to the water, when I think Holmes takes on the massive, like, French guy.
Yep.
That to me is a brilliant action sequence. I love those movies. I mean, once again, you know, people complain about things. People are always complaining about something, whining and everything. But at the end of the day, Holmes is quite an accomplished martial artist in the books.
Yeah,
so to have, you know what I mean? So to have him slugging it out with someone, it's not it's almost like Bond. You know, people say, you know, he doesn't do this and he doesn't do that. In the book created by Ian Fleming, he's an agent of the government. You know, if the government say to Bond, go and kill this guy, he'll go and do it without question. The movies romanticize and the actors become almost like the character. And then when they go back to the source material, they're criticized. But it's very, very interesting. But Holmes is he's a martial artist, and he obviously does all sorts of things, you know. But that's what makes him, such a hell of a character. That's why he's around now and always will be.
Yeah, and, you know, and also with the Bond, you know, getting back on Bond a second, you know, Casino Royale, for me, I think Craig's Bond is about the closest to the Bond that we had in the books. Only, obviously, the Bond that we had in the books was more of a male chauvinist, because he was kind of like, I think, Fleming-based Bond on very much on his own viewpoint and his own experiences.
Yeah, Fleming seemed to be, I think he enjoyed this sort of rumor that he was basically James Bond. You know, maybe he kind of furthered that or whatever, but he's supposed to, once again, very interesting character, but he was supposed to model a lot of that on his real life. But, you know, Bond in the books is quite an unpleasant sort of guy. I mean, he's a sexist, he's a heavy drinker, he's a little bit on the pathological side, he's got a lot of problems, and he's a blunt instrument that will basically come down on whoever he's ordered to come down on. You know, you get Sean Connery and especially Roger Moore, and then it starts to go through a process where people think Roger Moore is James Bond. He is on film, but the source material has been heavily deviated away from. But that's how it survives, and that's how it thrives, and that's why we've got we have a movie coming out this year, because it is able to adapt, which is fantastic and admirable.
Mm-hmm. That'd probably be an interesting one, wouldn't it? You know, so like Doctor Who meets Bond.
Yeah, we've had a lot of people suggest all sorts of crossovers. I know that there was a contest a few months ago, and people responded to a question we asked about what would you like to see as a crossover. I think Batman was one of the favorites in that. But they're easier said than done. You know, they're easier said than done as far as that's concerned. But when you but it's interesting to think about like a mashup, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of like I said earlier on, it's kind of interesting to have the Doctor and Holmes, because they're kind of, you know, complete opposites. So I'm kind of guessing in the relationship of them working together, there's bound to be quite a bit of friction between the two of them.
Yeah, there is a little bit of, I mean, right from the word go, you know, the Doctor's almost sort of in awe of Holmes. Like, he's almost sort of, it's almost the same as the Christopher Eccleston third episode, The Unquiet Dead, where the Doctor's very much in awe of Charles Dickens. Because I like that episode. I love that episode as well. So once again, there's a bit of an influence there. They kind of go when the Doctor gets something wrong, Holmes picks it up. When Holmes gets something wrong, obviously the Doctor picks it up. The main thing we wanted to avoid was having Holmes like almost playing Watson to the Doctor's Holmes, if you know what I mean. Holmes is very much an equal partner in this, but there's a bit of a madcap quality to the Doctor, which doesn't always always sit well with Holmes, who's very methodical, whereas the Doctor's obviously working a lot on his instincts and his knowledge of sort of alien threats and things like that. So there's a lot of humour in it as well. I mean, I don't want anyone thinking it's a depressive a depressive escapade. There's quite a lot of humour in it. We had a lot of fun making it, and a lot of the scenes we ad-libbed with the actors, Roy and I and Mike, threw around a lot of lines to come up with the wine gum scene from, I think, episode 4 of season 1 was a big favourite. The magnifying glass scene where Holmes is trying to get the truth about the Doctor's feelings about Cassandra out of him, and he's looking at him through his magnifying glass and things like that. So there's a little bit of a comedic element to them as well, which we love, because, you know, we like to have a bit of a laugh.
Yeah, I can actually see that that working very well, you know, because obviously the friction between two characters being opposite sides of the same coin, You know, Holmes aspiring to be better than human, and
yes.
and the Doctor sort of trying to go the other way.
Yes, he's trying to sort of, you know, fit in and be more of the everyman. And certainly we extend this in season two, where the journey that continues for Holmes and the Doctor, we wanted to make it more. Whether we've succeeded, we don't know, but the original ambition was to make it more than there's a problem, they show up, there's a bit of a, you know, a bit of a showdown, everyone buggers off and goes back to the homes. We wanted it to be more on the personal side for each of them. So as they descend into this almost like a supernatural element to the story, season one was basically like a murder mystery, whereas season two is like a supernatural horror story. So mm-hmm. there's a different theme. You're not concerned with who Jack the Ripper is in season two. You're concerned about the extension and how these things have all developed. But in season one, who's the Ripper is very much a theme. But in season two, it's very, very, very personal for each of them. And they rely on each other. And we hear, I always say see, but it's audio, so you hear. We really are able to hear their relationship kind of, you know, develop. And how they are there for each other as well, which that was the intention. Like I said, hopefully, you know, fingers crossed. Hopefully, it's come off.
Mm-hmm. Can you see your? You know, it's AM audio. It's AM audio media, right?
Yeah, AM audio media. Andrew and Mike. So A is Andrew. Mike is Mike's the M audio media. Yeah, and the joke we always talk about is we're looking for a Harry to join the team so we can be ham audio media.
And pigs may snide.
Yeah, if listening to our stuff, people might already say that we've already achieved the ham element of it, but who knows, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, can you see yourselves, say, in about another 20 years' time, singing unique stories, you know, not necessarily Doctor Who, but, you know, something else that you guys have come up with yourself?
Yeah, well, in 20 years, we're probably, the way things have gone for season two at times, we'd probably both be in some kind of psychiatric institution. But what we'd hope to do is we've got various things that we're presently hoping to make happen. The next project we're going to be, which is very much basically at the writing stage, we've got 6 episodes planned out, is an exploration of fandom, all fandom, but we want to sort of bend it around a romantic comedy. So that's going to be the next project. Some familiar faces, not faces, it's audio. You see, I can't stop saying that. Some familiar voices from the first two seasons of Dark Journey will be involved. So that's going to be the next thing. We've got Hipsterhood, which is also in development and the casting stages at the moment, which is the ups and downs of the youth in sort of a hipster area of Toronto. And we also have a comedic venture with a very funny comedian called Atwe Atwe, who's done a lot of stuff for us, the master of 1,000 voices. So we're doing a comedic sci-fi thing with him, which may or may not be modeled on a popular BBC show, but who knows? There's a clue there.
Cool. The reason I asked you that question about maybe in about 20 years' time, you actually having yourself set up as an acting audio company, because last year I was lucky enough to do an interview with Nicholas Briggs, who, as you know, he's kind of like the head producer at Big Finish and the voice of the Daleks.
Fantastic, yeah. I've been mad in the Autons and all the lot.
Exactly, and I basically asked him how Big Finish came about, and it came about because, you know, it was him and a couple of other fans, and, you know, it came about by just being something that a couple of fans were doing for other fans, and they were singing these things at conventions.
It's a very interesting story. It is kind of what we did. I mean, we don't make any money off of this. It's all done. I mean, if anything, it costs us money to to put things together, and it certainly takes a lot of time. But at the end of the day, we love doing it, and we love the fact that we can share it with people, and people find it interesting. You know, as we've always said, it's made by fans for the fans. So that's always been our intention. But maybe to do something non-Doctor Who related, we have no shortage of ideas. Hipsterhood, obviously, and the other ones I mentioned being on the burner at the moment. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So is there going to be? We've got season two, which is being released as we speak.
Yeah, episode three is premiering tomorrow on Who Wars. That's the Age of Banishment. You can go to AM Audio Media, our official website, and you can also check out the Facebook page. As I said, they're all free. Season one comprises five episodes. Season two is going to be seven episodes plus an epilogue. It's all free. It's on iCloud. You can download it. Yep. Have it with our blessing, please.
Is there a season three in the works?
There is a trailer that we recorded for a hypothetical season three. Yes, there is a trailer. So I guess the answer to that is yes, there is something. We had some fun with it, and what we did was, everyone loves when they did the Christmas specials for Doctor Who, and then you saw what was coming up in a few months, and you get those fast cut trailers. So we quite fancied recording scenes for stories that didn't actually exist in the whole story. So a little sound bite to get you interested. We've got the Daleks in Scotland during the Highland clearances, for example. So we did one of those trailers, and there's interesting ideas in those trailers for stories that would fit very nicely into the Dark Journey universe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we would love to do them. We'd love to do this every day, but you have to pay the bills, right?
So. Exactly, yeah. I mean, it's kind of funny you said Daleks in Scotland. I just envisaged Daleks speaking with Scottish accents and taking part in the Highland Games.
That would be, well, we had Exterminate the Caver, you know. We had Ricky, who's a Yorkshire lad, and Ricky, he was our, we're always thanking people in AM Audio Media, which is not a bad thing to do, and we will never forget, you know, to do it either. But Ricky was our featured artist for episode two last week, which was The Case of the Poison Sky. We highlight an artist and an actor, and we talk about them, and, you know, our experience with them, and in that episode, Ricky can do voices for everybody. He can do Rainbow, he can do Zippy and George, he can do Davros, he can do the Daleks, he plays Inspector Gull in Dark Journey. He's one of those guys in the studio, we need this, I'll do it. What accent would you want me to do? I can play Watson, I'll do him as a Scot and stuff like that. But he was, we came up with the idea to do Yorkshire Daleks, which were quite funny, so having the Daleks accented is kind of an interesting thing, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to me, our Daleks sound like to come from Birmingham. I don't know why that is, but they all sound like to come from Birmingham.
Like Birmingham, exterminate, all right. Yeah, they're a bit more energized than that. I was at the airport in Birmingham, and I was trying to take Marmite back to Toronto. And the lady there I didn't realize it, but you were not able to do it. So I put Marmite in my cake. It goes through the X-ray machine, and the lady's looking at it rather puzzled. You can see it's a classic, the profile of a Marmite thing. And she looked at me and she said, "Have you got Marmite in this case?" And I'm like, "Yes." And I lost my Marmite in, Birmingham. So, but it wasn't exterminated, so it was okay.
Dear me. Okay, well, Andrew, thanks for your time. It's been great having you on the show.
Yes, thanks for your time, and all the best with the next 15 years of your wonderful online endeavors, my friend.
Oh, well, thanks for that. I mean, hopefully we last another 15 years. I'm surprised we last this long.
I'm sure you will. I'm sure you will. We'll all be in that retirement home together that I mentioned.
Aye. Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Andrew.
Right. No
okay.
problem at all. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
And that was Andrew Chambers. I'd like to thank Andrew for taking time to be interviewed. And if you haven't already, check out Doctor Who Dark World. It's worth having a listen to. You can get it at ammedia.com, I think. Before I go, I'd like to make quick reference to some of the great shows we got on the League of Geeks network. Well, sorry, the League of Geek Network. You know, on Monday nights, we have new episodes of Genretainment with Mats and Julie Pyle. They do a great show. Lots of interviews and, you know, some great laughs on that show. And also, usually uploaded late Wednesday, probably Thursday, is the Pappy show of this network here, and that is Super Geeked Up, which is led by Jeff Burns and his gang, and they usually have guests on every week, and they play fun geeky games, and it's a fun show, so you should check it out. You can get both those shows right here on League of Geek. The URL for Genretainment is blogtalkradio.com/genretainment, and it's blogtalkradio.com/ super geeked up. And of course right here it's like SFP now, it's blogtalkradio.com/SFP now. Anyway, as always, thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll be back at you again next week with more interviews and specials. And before I do go, don't forget to tune in on Sunday for the Pandorica Opens. It's our first episode back in about 2 years. And this is actually going to be our first Pandorica Opens where we're talking about Peter Capaldi. And it's going to be fun catching him on his second year. So thanks as always for listening, and we'll be seeing you soon. Bye for now.